Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello.
And our super producer, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
Man, it's hard enough living in these days and times and, you know, waiting for technological progress. Every day checking to see what developments been made in immortality and other stuff and dealing with gear that doesn't work the way you want and feeling that, like, man, like, it still feels like we're 50 years behind the times in some ways, you know? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, are you talking about those timeless frustrations with modern conveniences that, you know, even in the 1950s, people were frustrated by when their gizmos wouldn't work?
Yeah, you want better. You want the better tech. You want your phone to be thinner. You want your computer to be faster. You want your car to be all electric and drive you places, you know?
Yeah. Well, are we heading in that direction?
Well, it's about time we passed a law to make these things true.
So... yes, and question is, like, how would you feel if all of a sudden we took you back to 1990? And I don't mean, like, your 1990, but I mean, like, just, like, 1990, like, just level tech and all that kind of thing.
No, you couldn't pay me enough to go back to 20, 30 years ago. Drivers used to come on floppy disks, and if you lost the floppy disk, you had to write a letter on dead trees and say, please send me the drivers again.
Remember playing a really big video game because it came with a bunch of floppies and you're swapping them in and out?
Yeah, man. I remember copy protection involved a red... filter so that you could see decoded materials to answer trivia questions.
Man, these are the kind of memories and more that we're going to be exploring this weekend when Brian and I debut Best of the Worst of the Internet, a Web 1.0 show that in Santa Monica on Sunday night will feature Andrew Main at the Westside Comedy Theater, 7 p.m. June 10th, the previous night in San Diego, June 9th.
So we all agree how much it would suck to have to travel back, you know. I mean, it'd be kind of historically could be kind of interesting or something like that. You know, I could wear my flared out jeans and shirts with zippers all over them and whatnot and all sorts of, you know, colored caps and be fine with it. But a lot of other stuff, just not worth it.
You would have to have a very aggressive travel schedule. Right. Like you would have to be like doing things that you can't do now or are different.
Yeah.
Now.
Like committing crimes. That's the only reason I could think of is let's go back to when it was easier to commit crimes and disappear. Westworld. It's 1990s world.
Yeah. I mean, and so imagine the further back you go. I mean, certainly little periods of time would be kind of neat, but to be stuck there would suck. So how would you like to be stuck? I don't know. 4,500 years in the past.
That would be bad. I mean, I'd rather be me right now than a pharaoh of Egypt. I'm fine where I am.
So you can understand the plight of the man stuck in our time from the year 6,491.
Wait, I've heard similar tales before. Is this the same guy that I heard about like 15, 20 years ago?
No, new guy. His name's James Oliver, not to be confused. And you know what he's done to prove that he's a time traveler? And like, the proof is like incontrovertible, guys. It's just no way around it.
He said it?
Passed a lie detector test.
Oh, geez. Yeah. With flying colors, no less.
I mean, it seems legit, right? As we all know, lie detector tests are universally considered as incontrovertible evidence. That's why all jury trials involve them and rely heavily on them. Yes. And it's not like self-delusion. You know, one guy, they hooked him up to a lie detector test and they said, is Xenu real? And he said yes, and he passed. And that's why I'm in Scientology now.
It's working out really well, though, Brian. I think there's a video of him here, and I think you can hear him, which there is.
Oh, this would be great. We could find out what a future dialect sounds like.
Yeah, I'm kind of like in my mind, I'm like kind of expecting, because like I think like, you know, Doctor Who, he's from Gallifrey, which sounds all like, you know, parts of UK, which let's see if we can hear this guy.
Is global warming going to be a big issue in the future?
Yes, like I said the other night, yes, it is. You guys are going to have significant issues with your planet becoming warmer and warmer. And like I said, it's going to be a mixture of man-made emissions and the fact that your planet is on a geological warming period. So it's a perfect storm of both natural and artificial happenings and occasions that are going to really cause an increase in global temperature, and it's going to start to become a problem. Especially, I know you've already heard an increase in, you know, tropical storms or drought periods or anything like that. It's going to get worse. So just be very careful of that in the future.
He's already. Okay, what doctor would come up with the knowledge that his patient is already dead? Would give the diagnosis of, you're going to get bladder cancer and it's going to be terminal. It will metastasize and go throughout your entire body. So be very careful about that.
I mean, he survived long enough to come back in time.
Well,
they asked him about, like, are there other planets? He says, you know, we're constantly finding new planets and galaxies every day. And then he says, sometimes we hit the jackpot. Lots of planets more intelligent than humans. There have been some conflicts, but most of it has been put under control by the Federation very quickly. The Federation is there as a peacekeeping vessel. Like, wow, what does this sound like? See, there's kind of like a United Nations style system of planetary leaders. You could kind of maybe call it like a United Federation of Planets or something.
Sure.
You know, saying this is a crazy new perspective on the future here, guys.
Yeah.
I would love to see a version of this where the interrogator was openly hostile to the alien, like ridiculing his future as being derivative, like
and another surprise feature is how we'll all have artificial intelligence systems called Siri.
What?
Oh, shut up.
Everyone in the future will have their own artificial intelligence system called Siri, which recognizes users by their voice.
Okay, so who is interviewing this person?
I mean, I think it's being interviewed by, I think, a paranormal site group.
It's a YouTube channel, Apex TV.
So gotcha. Okay, all right. So this is something that is getting attention via YouTube, and so now that is the news hook and justification for it to be written about in other places.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Because I would say, in general, and this is kind of the hole in the sheet for a lot of these publications, is that they're like, oh, no, wait. It's we're covering the fact that people are watching it on YouTube. We're not responsible for actually reporting on this person or dealing with it. We're literally just, you know, it could be slap bracelets or beanie babies. Like, we're just covering the trend. When the number one thing is like, all right, well, who is this guy? Like, somebody get his driver's license that I'm sure he still has in his pocket. And let's take a gander at this.
So they have more stuff here. They have an interview here with a man, another same channel. They have one with a man who claims to have been to the year 5000 and took a photo.
Did he bring it back, or is he just saying, I went there and I took a photo?
I guess they do a real big tease on the photo here. And then I don't know if we actually see the photo.
they kind of have a lot of these, like, time traveler took this picture in the year 2118. Time traveler reveals picture of future car. This time traveler took this photo on Mars in 3812.
I mean,
get the photo, though.
I'm trying to see if we do get the photo.
Time traveler from 4126 brought back from future. They have a lot of, there are a lot of very different time travelers on this website.
We need to have some sort of time immigration, because this is really going to get unwieldy. You know, that was like, you know, the joke about how the Titanic sunk.
Well, and so
the weight of all the time travelers.
Oh, the most dangerous beaches in the world, guys.
Here's what I suspect culturally is happening is that we are hungry for a certain type of story. And in a freewheeling marketplace with no penalties for being full of nonsense, like, you know, posting on YouTube, sooner or later, something fills that open niche. And the story, you know, whether it's right or wrong, it's too good to not pass along. I mean, here we are passing it along just because it's so tasty in just the exact right way. That would explain multiple, you know, memes trying to fill the same sociological niche.
Yeah.
I mean, we've always had, you look at like, you know, Weekly World News, and you look at kind of, there's always been this place for the fringe. What was the magazine? The 40 and Times.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Although 40 and Times did a pretty good job of not so much, passing judgments so much as being just a collection of really weird stuff of all varieties.
Oh, great read.
Kind of posted without comment where it's like, this is a claim about this thing. How about that? Moving along.
Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking about this, the whole idea of like, if you said, hey, I'm from the future, like if you're a magician, it could be a great gimmick because you could say, hey, here's the deal. I can't reveal anything that is going to change the world. So I will not tell you, you know, who will be the next president. I will not tell you tomorrow's stock market prices because I can't interfere like that. Now, I can seal them inside of an envelope and put them inside of a safe. And after these things have been determined, I can then reveal them so that I'm not changing the course of history.
This is a great idea. And I would imagine you could actually, one of the routines could be people ask me why, you know, like I broke reality once and I was severely admonished by the council. Let me tell you the story.
It's always a council. And they wore jumpsuits too.
And show you the evidence of the greatest mistake I made as a time traveler. And then, of course, it's just another kick-ass mentalism effect, you know, where you predicted the lottery or some nonsense. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Well, considering all mentalism is a different a coat of paint on exactly the same tricks over and over and over again, this would definitely would do what all the best mentalists do, which is soft shoe and do the, you know, do the fun hoopla around. I got it right.
You also can solve the moral problem. Like, well, if you knew 9/11 was going to happen, why didn't you do anything about it? Like, cause then I would never be born. You know, because, you know, from 300 years in the future. And if I change this thing now, all my family, everybody I know, it's gone.
That's the thing for everything big, right? Because the bigger it is, the less you can change it. Because this affects migrations and economies and jobs. And these are, you know, maybe little things, whether or not this specific bag of Funyuns gets taken from the Piggly Wiggly, you know, can probably come out in the wash. But, you know, the World War II, 9/11, those can't. Like now you're talking about genocide if you change something willingly.
Yeah, well, and you could point out like, you know what? Once I did, I stopped 9/11, but then I saw 9/12 and I went back in time and stopped myself from stopping 9/11.
Or you stopped 8/15 and then 9/11 happened.
That's right. Oh, exactly. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, 8/15 was so much worse. 9/11, best I could do, guys.
Yeah.
9/11, the best I could do, guys.
All I think of is jokes on to come after that, and none of them are good for us. And we should.
So, thinking about the future and protecting the future, you need to protect the future of our show if we can.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, man. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Here's the deal. Not only are you donating to independent media. We don't have ads on this show. We're very, very busy people. And we want to make sure that we continue to bring you this program. And that is dependent on you guys helping us. However, we do believe that if you give us money, you should get something back for it. And that's why you get that super simple RSS feed right there on the page. As soon as you become a patron, you can do it on your phone. The entire process. You can become a patron, copy that RSS link, pop it right in the podcatcher of your choice. Boom, you're done. No logging in, no authorizations. You don't have to wait for some different code every 5 months. This is dead simple. You get this show and you get our after show right there on your phone. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
For the record, A lot of people are telling me that they enjoy After Things as much, possibly more, because it's all centered on real, tangible, lifting up the skirt numbers, where we talk the real talk about what it's like to be an independent creator. Now, we have a background in magic and in authorship and in comedy, but whatever independent creation you do, we answer your questions and we give it the real talk because we love you.
Speaking of love, gentlemen, I love biology. Do you love biology? Do you love science?
I mean, you can't help it, right? It's like, do you love reality?
I mean, not all of it. You know, I mean, sometimes, I mean, I accept it. Is that the same? And that's the thing, too, is thinking about the whole, how long before we start, instead of time travelers, we get people like, yeah, no, I'm a player in the simulation. I'm stuck. They won't let me out.
Oh, that's interesting. So imagine an MMO where your buy-in, let's say they get you young enough and you don't have anything, and you're like, this is the best MMO. Everyone knows it's the best MMO. You're now the legal age of 18. You can sign this document. It's a 4-year commitment. You're going to live in the coolest spot in the known galaxy. Everyone knows it's the coolest spot. All we ask for is an ongoing percentage of your revenue for the rest of your life, but it won't matter because you're going to spend most of it in here, and it's a super good bargain. And then 4 years into it, you want out, but you're legally bound.
Or, I mean, number one, you could probably do that for Fortnite loot right now. you could sign up half of American public school kids by saying, hey, you're going to get a new Fortnite skin if you give us a very, very reasonable 10% of all future earnings.
I mean, that does make sense.
We're just going to let rich people plug into your blood supply.
Yeah. Just show up to, don't worry, every once in a while you got to recharge your skins, and that means coming on down to the cafeteria where we're just going to stick a needle in you, and some of it will go to charity.
The rest will go to finance this amazing MMO that you're in.
Yeah.
Man, where are you at on the idea of selling blood?
I think you should be able to sell body tissues. I think that the reasoning is that we have shortages of certain things. And I think that you buy de facto, there's an entire industry that involves, you're not allowed to sell these things, but you have handling fees, things like that, that are done. So, you know, I think that there's the danger, though, is, of course, is you don't want it to be something there's renewables and there's things that aren't, though. You know, and that's the thing. It's like blood, you can keep producing blood, doing this like that. But yeah, getting, you know, do we want to hear, you know, part of it is, do we want to hear poor, you know, stories about people selling kidneys who need their kidneys or whatever? Well, you can still do it. And, you know, I think that ultimately you kind of have a certain amount of agency over your body to do that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the thing, is that is it on some way, does it become like altruistic suicide? I'm going to degrade my life significantly to the point where death is far more likely for $50.
Yeah. Did I tell you what was happening at the airport when I left Australia?
Okay, go ahead. Because I know what was happening at the airport when I left Australia. I was sitting and having coffee with Evan Tesloid and Matthew Kopecky. It was delightful.
It just reminds me that I'm old. Justin Know Australia Young. Old domestic gerbs here. Everybody else flying to down under. Not me. Just hanging out.
We'll fix it.
Hey, guys.
So I was there possibly shooting my Discovery Channel special. And maybe
hypothetically,
very, very large creatures that could eat people were involved. And maybe me in a very vulnerable position, like testicular shrinkage level. Like,
would you describe those animals as weak or strong?
They have a gentle side, I'm sure. But anyhow, so I'm going through this thing, right? And it was kind of an amazing, awesome experience. Can't wait to be able to talk more about it. So I am at the airport counter, and I look down, like 20 feet away, 30 feet away. There's news crews there. Not for me, but there's news crews surrounding some guy in a wheelchair, right? They're like filming this guy in a wheelchair, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I wonder what's going on there. So I asked the lady across the counter, and she's whispering to somebody else. And they go, oh, that's David Goodall. I'm like, who's that? David Goodall, an Australian scientist, 104 years old, who was flying to Switzerland.
Holy cow, to end his life. Him? You saw him?
I saw him. I saw him doing the interview. He was right down the counter. And I'm like, for me, it was kind of like a very interesting kind of like, man, I just went through this scary thing. Like, oh, look at this guy and what he's doing in his life. And it was just this same day I'm coming home. This guy's flying out there to Switzerland too. And I'm just looking over that he's being interviewed. And it was like just this sort of, and then I'm like finding out about this guy. So he's a scientist. He's 104 years old. And he's like, listen, I'm done. You know, I don't really want to go through decline. I don't want to go beyond anything else now. Australia wouldn't allow for like assisted suicide there. So he says, all right, he's going to go to Switzerland to go do that. There were court cases, people trying to stop him, trying to prevent him from doing that. And finally he made it there and end his life.
What a perfect case study for this question, this argument. I mean, you know, what is the argument? What is the non-spiritual argument to be made to keep a 104-year-old man alive for what, you know, so he could break a record?
Well, I think when you frame it that way, it certainly there is, you're putting your spin on their motivations for it. And I would say that there is this, I would say that the pro don't let him or the don't let him do it sort of thing is the idea of
the slippery slope argument.
I mean, not even, and that's a real argument, but I mean, it's a real, we can categorize slippery slope and say, hey, now that it's a thing that can be misused, but you know, when you follow, and this is not to lead there, but when you follow what actually led to the Holocaust and all the laws that were passed in Germany that went from, you know, we have an interest in public health. That sounds great. You know, sometimes people get really, really, really sick and it can't be helped and we should have palliatives. We should do things to sort of help, you know, let them have ease their way towards their end of life. And it's like, yeah, that sounds like it's a humane thing. Like, yeah. And, you know, sometimes you're terminal and nothing can be done. Well, that's true. You know, tuberculosis can kind of be terminal and like, well, okay. And you know who gets tuberculosis a lot? Gypsies and Jewish people, you know, and you're like, whoa. And that's the danger, is that all of a sudden you go from the government saying, and it can start with capital punishment too. You can say, if we have capital punishment and we're saying it's okay to kill people, then for what grounds? Like, only if you murder somebody. Or treason. What does treason mean? You know, so I don't know. I'm not saying like, oh, I have an answer there, but I'm saying that to parse it. So like, yeah, I just was watching. I'm like, wow, like that's, I get this guy's point of view. You know, you're 104.
Did you know at that moment that you were witnessing such an international news event? Or did you just kind of hear like, oh, I guess that's a local interest thing. And then later discover that literally the, you know, most of the globe was talking about shitty or something.
Oh, I mean, when I looked at the number of camera crews around him, I knew this was something bigger. I knew something bigger was going on. And then I asked what it was. They said this. I said, oh, well, it's got all the international beats to it. But I'd been very much away from the news. So I had no idea. So all at my first encounter is I'm at the counter. I'm like, huh. That's weird. Why are they talking to this man in the wheelchair? And then somebody says to him, I'm like, oh, this is.
How long did he spend in Switzerland before he went through the rest of it?
Seemed like a week or two, maybe.
Yeah. I think this is kind of morbid, but I'm kind of curious as to like,
what do you do to fill your days? It's like, you don't want to die jet lagged. You got to get your schedule adjusted.
Do you like run right there from the airport? Like, do you get a dip in the pool? Like maybe some room service?
Yeah, no, because I mean, he was leaving the same day I was. And so I know what day I left. So I think it was about a week there. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. I mean, like, do you say like, I hope you enjoyed your trip? Like, what do you, if he sips you on a tip, like, do you get upset?
I mean, like in your immigration forms and stuff like this, are you really worried about declaring what you're bringing because they are going to check when you bring it back out?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
you declare one soul. You're like, I have no intention of bringing it back home.
Yeah. You open up a credit card at IKEA.
Did we talk about this? I read the book when Breath Becomes Air. Did we talk about this on the show?
You mentioned it. Sounds fascinating.
Yeah. If this is an interesting question to you, I highly recommend it. It does so in a not morbid way. It's written by a neurologist or a brain surgeon who finds out that he's got mega cancer and is going to die. And, you know, there's ups and downs. And then at one point the book abruptly ends and his wife takes over and tells the rest of his story. And, I don't know. It's not something anyone likes to think about, but when you like thinking about this 104-year-old gentleman and his conscious decision that he's out and he's done, man, oh man, are there some ways it could go so much worse? And, when you start thinking of, you know, thankfully a peaceful death and you know, for as miserable as some people might go out, I don't know, facing it face to face, I would imagine changes a lot about your perspective about what people should or shouldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have strong answers on it, and I'm sort of in the position of maximizing, you know, individual freedom. You obviously, you know, that's the caveat. Like, you want to put safeguards in there to keep people from hurting themselves, but that's where it becomes problematic. It's like, yeah, you want people to hurt themselves by putting alcohol in their body, you know, or smoking marijuana.
Saving people from themselves.
Watching rated R movies.
Is another slippery slope.
Yeah, so... No easy answers here, folks, but, you know, I think that we all enjoy the idea of just keep asking questions and trying to understand it from different points of view and perspectives. The story I was going to get to, which sort of this is going to become something more to the threshold, and I can imagine, you know, I've been doing some courses, some computer learning, computer science, you know, MML courses, all that. And one of the courses I did, they played that clip, that fantastic clip from the Today Show in the early 1990s. When Katie Couric and Bryant Gumbel are trying to explain what the internet is.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
So you know, good. Do you want to – can we play that? This is an example.
It's worth looking at because it's laughable now, but to anyone who was not alive or conscious or plugged in, like, it was not unreasonable at the time because I remember being on the receiving end of that explanation of somebody explaining to me how the internet was different from bulletin board systems and –
You even had a context though to understand what a BBS was,
right?
And I would say this was probably a year or two after the internet was already kind of a thing. But they remember, like, yeah, we were all alive when, like, and it was the internet had been around before we were alive, but it was the World Wide Web, which was the big change. 1994, the Today Show, 24 years ago.
Yes, I wasn't prepared to translate that. As I was doing that little tease.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Little mark with the A and then the ring around it.
At.
See, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Katie said she thought it was about.
Yeah. Oh.
But I'd never heard
or
it.
Around.
I'd never heard it said. I'd always seen around. The mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC.
Yeah, well, I heard something around or about fun. The lunchroom.
See, there it is. Violence at NBC, GE.com. I mean...
Well, Allison should know. What do you
is
say
internet
that,
anyway?
Internet is that massive computer
right.
network,
mm-hmm.
the one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean that's big? How does one? What do you write to it like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
No, she can't say anything in 10 seconds or less.
Oh, Allison will be in the studio shortly.
What
does it mean?
It's a giant computer network made up of, started from...
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us what this was.
It's like
look
a
in
computer
the dictionary.
Billboard.
It's not a it's a computer billboard, but it's nationwide.
Right.
And it's several universities and everything all joined together.
Right.
And others can access it.
Right.
And it's getting bigger and bigger all the time.
Just it came great. In really handy during the quake. A lot of people, that's how they were communicating out to tell family and loved ones they were okay because all the phone lines were down.
I was telling Katie, and I've
been talking. You don't need a phone line to operate internet?
No.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful because it's so authentic and it's so exactly right. I remember being like 12 years old and to my shock and amazement, realizing that my father was alive before television. There was a time that he did not have a television in his house and I could not wrap my mind around it. And I asked, like, what did you do? And he's like, well, I don't know. Played, walked around, played sports.
It's boring,
punched
Brian.
Each other, you know? And, and I was like, whatever, I can't imagine it. And now my kids are in the exact same position.
What's amazing is the fact that all those people have jobs, like that they are all still at the top of their profession, to show you how far we have come. And Katie Couric, I think up until very recently,
had a Yahoo show.
Yahoo! Yeah.
Yahoo show.
She wound up working for Yahoo, and I think she might have just left. No.
Speaking of other 90s artifacts. I think that on one hand, it's very funny and kind of adorable to watch people struggling with what this thing is, but it's sincere and it's honest, because we all have that moment. We all have that moment where, you know, I remember in high school, internet and then World Wide Web happened kind of right after, and then hanging out with friends as we're, you know, because I used to be on BBS as, you know, middle school. You know, we used to do that. We used to play that. But then, you know, what this thing is doing, and there were mail servers and stuff like this, but I didn't know anybody to send one to. But whenever you think about new technologies, new shifts, like I'm going through that sort of moment right now, is like I talk about, you know, getting into artificial intelligence and all that sort of stuff. Did we talk about generative adversarial networks before?
I don't know that I know that term.
So that's, remember we watched the Flintstones cartoon, the computer generated, right?
Correct. Where it took machine learning, took a bunch of elements and just sort of cobbled together, you know, Fred Flintstone standing wearing a blue tie next to Wilma.
Right. So I found out there's a couple of different ways you can go about this. But one of the things that happened was as people started building like neural networks, imagine like a bunch of little small little connectors that decide little algorithms, and you put something through it and say, what's in this? You put 1,000 images in there and find out what's common, and then you test it to see if it can tell the difference between something new you add to it, and you train something to, you know, to kind of do this. That's how we do facial recognition, etc. Well, generative adversarial networks happened when a guy, again, when I say a guy, this is like 4 years ago, was 29 when he came up with this, said, I wonder if I just put a random generator on one end of it, and I kept feeding it stuff through that network and getting a score, and then told the random generator to start, get saying nope, but it would start putting blobs here and moving things around there. What would happen if I let that run through thousands of epochs, if all of a sudden that generator would just start being able to fake things? Could it fake a face if you told it nope, a little bit better, and then all of a sudden it would start putting blobs in certain spots and doing colors and stuff? And that's what's happened now, is we've got computer systems that can generate a human face, not by doing a collage of human faces, but putting it through a face, you know, putting random images through a random data through a detector and getting a feedback and telling it closer. Yep, that looks like a face. So if you do generative adversarial network and then generate faces, you know, look at the Google search on that, and you'll see some examples now of computer generated faces. And again, it's not generated in the sense that it's like it took a bunch of 3D models of a human face. It literally, okay, these are all like, it literally is just, it was a random generator that was getting feedback to say face like, not face like, until it starts creating hyper realistic faces. These have never existed before. These weren't in any database. It was just looking, comparing it to, you know, a generator that analyzed 50,000 images and being able to say like closer. Yeah, you see some of the earlier images are kind of scary.
Ha, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah. And you can use this for a lot of stuff. It's not just faces. It's kind of creating other kinds of data and stuff. And so we're entering into this very fascinating world where the computers are getting creative in sort of the true sense and generating, new, you know, taking data and generating new things from that we never thought would come before.
Where do you think the value of this is headed? Certainly we're getting to a place where, you know, eventually you'll have a virtual director. Let's say you're somebody who has a spec script and they say, well, I don't want to read your spec script. I just want to see a computer simulation of what the movie might look like. And you run it through there and it pops it out. And, you know, it manufactures versions of all the set pieces that you have. But I feel like there are some surprising edge cases of what this will lead to. And I would love to explore that territory with you guys if you have any ideas.
Yeah, Brian, I think that's exactly right, is that we can map what we think the future is onto our present, mm-hmm. and go like, yeah, I think it's going to look like this. But it's these things that we didn't see coming that are really, I mean, you look at, you know, gaming was cool. We had online gaming with other people in the 80s, you know, small, you know, games and stuff like this. Now that with mobile and gaming where it is now, the idea that most games by default, you're playing with hundreds of people or thousands of people, how big this is just, it's a paradigm shift. You have a company like Twitch, what's an totally emergent system or company idea that you wouldn't even think about 20 years ago, because just the idea that bandwidth would be so cheap to be able to broadcast things and to talk about it. But there's this, there's such a community for this.
Do you know what just popped into my head from what you said? Here's a weird edge case. Tell me if A, you think this is plausible, and B, you think it's already happening. It occurs to me that if you have a powerful enough server farm, there's value in virtual consumers. People who live virtual lives, because we've talked about the problem with bots, right? You know, there's that they stir up things and they guide things one way or the other. But imagine if you had a server farm that represented 10,000 different consumers, each one with a YouTube profile, each one with a Facebook, each one with a Twitter, each one with a surfing habit, a comment style habit, and basically and the ability to spend real money, the ability to go on to Amazon and buy stuff and evaluate it. I guess that's probably already happening in a hybrid kind of way, because we've heard stories of people, consumers in China, who are hired to enhance their a company's Alibaba rating. So people will buy the stuff and then say, oh, super great, it's awesome. And it has to get sent somewhere. So oftentimes it gets sent to unwitting third parties in the United States or whatever. But why not virtualize all of that? And weirdly, at that point, could these virtual consumers possibly be adding a substantial percentage to the real economy?
I guess what comes down to saying that, like, what is the purpose of, I think there's going to be a point in the future where virtual people are going to be the biggest, fastest growing part of the economy. From your description there, who owns them, or what's the,
I don't know. It's too new a thought because it just popped into my mind, but I can imagine in the short term, somebody who is able to say, you know, shrug his shoulders and say, yeah, I got bots that don't act like bots. I got bots that act like people that have complete profiles that if they are taken down as bots, they will write a letter of objection and send in photographs and blah, 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 blah. Like that all of a sudden, you know, and I can encourage them to like your project, product.
Like review farms now, but more AI.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Correct. Like that's the short term. But then like what happens if the way to, so imagine a race to perfection of enhanced bot farms. And then at some point they do enough buying and they do enough contribution to the economy that all of a sudden it's like, well, don't turn them off, because this is really helpful that it's bolstering the economy.
Well, you know, you have an example of that now with the farms that are done to game ad networks, right? And so if I sell advertising on my website and I have Google as, you know, I have a deal with Google, I will hire these farms to generate web traffic. And so you'll see these, you know, you see these places in Asia where they'll show like a wall with like 500 iPhones, old iPhones that are all connected to the internet. They're all playing the part of people and stuff. And that's why that's a big, big problem there. But so that it's a vital part of the gray market economy. It's a detriment. It's a cost to somewhere else because you're taking something out of this market and giving it to somebody else by not adding any value to the original, you know, to other parties to it. But certainly, you know, it's, you know, at least, but it's owned by somebody, you know?
Well, I guess so we've already gotten comfortable with the idea of an AI that has figured out the right stories to tell to entertain humans. Mm-hmm. But for the first time, I'm trying on the reverse. What about a human that figures out the right stories to tell an audience of AIs? And then all of a sudden there's value to that person. It's like, no, I know exactly what they want to hear. And I put it out and then they reward me with clicks. And that's how I make my living, is I am a comedian for AIs. Or I am a thought leader.
How different is that than what you do every week with the Modern Rogue and Scam School?
Certainly, we've talked about this before, you know, the YouTube algorithm is, you know, if you think too hard about it, you realize like anyone who makes their money from YouTube works for Google and they have a manager, and their manager is an insane robot that will not tell them what it wants. It just simply rewards and punishes seemingly randomly. And you're supposed to eventually figure out, oh, my robot manager seems to like it when I do this. So, I mean, you're right.
You know, think about this is you might have a thing. There might be a value in, you know, a lot as games become more complicated, online games is to create more intelligent AI to play with his players. Right. And one of the cool things that OpenAI, which is the initiative that Elon Musk has been backing to try to make sure we develop friendly AI. If you go to gym.openai.com, what they have is a really cool environment that you can play video games and try to train agents, you know, systems to try to play games and do things. They have like Pac-Man and other stuff. So when you've heard about like, you know, AI playing games, this is one of the ways you do it. In some computer machine learning courses is you go to this, you try to develop things that can play it and get better at it. And we've seen examples of, there's been the last couple of years, some amazing developments in speeding up. We've talked about, AlphaGo, which beat Go, and then AlphaZero, which was able to become the best player, the game of Go, without ever watching another human play. And so here they have a bunch of different examples of simple games, like trying to balance things and spin levers. And you're basically trying to develop, you know, intelligent systems that understand what's going on, a version of Space Invaders, where it's trying to play that and to figure out the rules. And we've seen examples of these, you know, AIs figuring out how to play these games better and coming to solutions humans have never seen before.
Jesus.
And they have a self-driving car one too, which you can do, which is a simulator for doing that.
So would it be bad if AI bots suddenly, and as I'm saying this, I realize how ridiculous it sounds, but welcome to the Weird Things podcast. Would it be bad if 40% of the economy was just AIs buying and selling shit?
It depends on who owns them. I mean, it depends upon the ownership of them. And we do have that. We've watched that in the stock market where we have intelligent systems, these black box systems, which control and fluctuate the stock market.
And every so often you have a runaway effect where they have to press pause mm-hmm. on the entire stock exchange as they're like, nope. Oranges are suddenly not worth negative dollars. Stop.
Yeah, because that's where a lot of the like market stops these days like happen, right? I mean, just as much as they are for like, all right, everybody, take a lunch and then think really hard about what you want to buy and sell. It's that you have these machines that will all the machines are not interconnected and they're all just triggering on actions that the previous machines are doing. And then they are taking actions. And next thing you know, nothing's worth anything. And we're all super poor.
So that's the fear. Cause like there is this, you hear about kind of this AI kind of cold war where China is starting to spend billions of dollars on it. We're trying to increase the amount of research and development into it. And you know, the hypes of anything are always overblown to an extent until they're no longer and they become commonplace. And that's a thing that, you know, you start to get into, you know, the Westworld where, hey, you know, there's a Westworld, there's a digital version of Westworld inside of Westworld.
Now you're talking just crazy talk.
Well, it's interesting because like things happen in ways we don't. Like I was reading a book, like Steven Pinker's book on consciousness, and I had to stop and go look at when was this book written, because he started talking about artificial intelligence. And he's a guy that believes there's a lot to be learned about artificial intelligence and how we handle, you know, how we understand the world or how we understand the brain. And then he made a comment about how facial recognition is really, really, really challenging. And he's like, well, if you're going to, you know, one, he had a description of a TV that I'm like, that's like an old TV they don't make anymore, a tube TV. I'm like, okay, it was just all right. It's still a good enough metaphor, but it's not, we're not scanning phosphors like we did. And then he said, well, facial recognition is so hard that, you know, in the future, when you're going to go into a building, it's going to be, you're going to do iris recognition, not facial recognition, which maybe, but the most common form of visual recognition is facial recognition, and it's done in your phone. And so when he wrote this, I don't think he had any idea at how, because literally 3 years later, they came up with this after he wrote this, which is 1999, a seminal paper in facial recognition came out, which has changed the game. And now everybody has a phone that does this now. And then he'd made some other things about like, I don't think this century or the next, we're going to see robots walking around doing chores and stuff. And it's like, you know, like, I don't know what we're going to see. I don't know. And I know that we think we're close to something, and then we find out they're hard, you know, self-driving. We think we can handle 95% of situations. That remaining 5%, that's the big challenge of when there's a guy in an orange vest standing in the road flagging you trying to go that way. But then all of a sudden we solve these things.
Yeah. I mean, again, the optimal clip of this episode is not that Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel did not know what the internet was and we can all laugh at them because now we all do. It is that they were not, you know, new kids on the block when they did that episode, and they are all still relevant. That's how fast this goes. This goes from nobody knowing to it's so passe, we don't even really acknowledge it anymore.
And we find it novel that there was ever a time that anybody didn't understand all of this.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh boy. You know, it's time.
Wait. Well, there's normally something that happens now, but it can't.
Well, I mean, it's been a while though. You know, we had people out of town, and you know, there's a lot of stuff has gotten in the way. The last time that we did something here, it was the adventure was over.
It's not Journey Quest.
Journey Quest had a beginning, a middle, and most importantly, an end.
Time now for Mission Quest.
Oh my God, it's a new quest. So what's Mission Quest?
Oh, gentlemen, so
it's pretty much Journey Quest.
Shut up. It's totally different.
It's Mission Quest. So, gentlemen, you're driving from the San Diego show.
Oh, this is in the very near future. This is a prediction of what's going to happen this upcoming weekend our live show of Night Attack.
Or a show like this. It could be like this, okay?
Okay.
So, and by circumstances, the two of you are in an old Volkswagen van for some reason. The only thing the rental company had, okay, and it's just you guys driving.
In fact, I remember, Justin. You remember the rental car company said they had no rental cars, and then we tried Uber and Lyft, and both of the apps were busted. But we were able to go on a Craigslist, and we said need car now, and Craigslist said there was a VW van for $500. Dude showed right up, and it was like, well, that's worth it, and so we grabbed that VW bus.
Yeah, he did. And then took off in a jetpack.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't need that anymore. I have a jetpack.
No, you don't. You don't have a jetpack.
No, he does.
Yeah. No, he did not.
He told us he did, and that it was invisible, and that's why we couldn't see it.
Went into the Taco Bell bathroom, and then we didn't see him again.
I mean, I thought I heard like a...
Maybe a hand dryer, but... Could be a jetpack. Okay.
Well, all right. Agree to disagree.
But we're definitely in this VW bus afterwards. We're
definitely in this VW bus, yeah.
You're driving the VW bus. You're driving from San Diego to Santa Monica. It's about 3 a.m. You guys decide you need some tacos. You want some tacos?
Oh, my God. I'm feeling
tacos. Oh, yeah. We could always go for some tacos. Middle of the night tacos? Of course.
Pull off the highway because you see Del Taco.
Justin. Del Taco, of course, is a staple of Southern California taco culture. But are we feeling like going with the big dog here? Do we want to look for a more local place? I mean, we're in Southern California.
It's the only place that's open.
It's 3 in the morning. I don't know how many taquerias are going to be slinging that.
All right, fine. Mediocre tacos. Let's go.
I mean, I'm just like, but like, do you have any other ideas other than we're just like on the hunt for a mom and pop taqueria at three in the morning?
Let's knock on some doors, ask if anyone has tortillas, ask if anyone's got beef laying around. I mean, I'm just saying I'm up for an adventure, but we could just get some tacos.
You're getting dangerously close to let's break into somebody's house and just make tacos.
I mean, okay, if the door is unlocked, that's half an invitation right at the get-go. But it's fine. We've got the money.
Del Taco it is.
Okay.
We're rolling into Del Taco. They have fries.
You pull into Del Taco. You pull into the parking lot. You notice, like, wait, has that black Escalade been following us all the way from San Diego?
Hey, Justin, I think that black Escalade might have been following us all the way from San Diego.
All right, Brian, how do you want to handle this surveillance situation?
Man, I already told you. We get out, we go ask if someone's got tortillas.
All right, no, that was not an excuse to open back up into your.
Okay, fine.
I need to breaking and entering my willy stiff to eat a taco situation.
Okay, Justin, I know it's way early for us to be doing this, but let's say we split up. I'm going to go around the back, and I'm going to pee behind this dumpster. And if anyone asks, I'll say that I had to pee, and I wanted to do it behind this dumpster. You go into the building, and we see if anyone follows us.
No, all right. No. I'm into that. No, I think that's what I was asking. Like, how are we going to – we got to surveil them a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So I loudly shout, oh, man. That was a big gulp too many for me.
Brian walks – and as you're discussing this, the door opens to the Escalade, and you see a man, well-dressed man, khakis, blazer, looks to be in his mid-50s.
I say, oh, excuse me.
Looks over, nods to you guys.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I think the bathroom's full. And so I start.
Portfolio. That's great. Walks inside, goes up to the counter and orders some tacos.
Okay. Well, I start kind of hobbling, doing a waddle walk. Like I have a really full belly. Like, whoa.
And he goes and he sits down. Wait for his order.
I mean, I'm in the back of the Del Taco at this point, and I
thought you were back by the. So you're following him in?
No. I went around to the back. I'm back by the dumpster.
Gotcha.
We had the plan and everything, Justin. Okay.
I didn't know. We had crossed.
I'm comically looking over my left shoulder and right shoulder and left shoulder again to see if anybody's peeking. Can I roll for perception and see if anybody is watching me pee behind this dumpster?
Nobody cares. Nobody's watching. Though you do notice some graffiti on the wall.
I read the graffiti.
The troll is coming.
I reach forward with my pinky finger and swipe across it to see if the paint is still wet.
Well, it's not wet, but it looks like it was there put a few days. It says the troll is coming.
All right, sniff. Okay. I nod.
Okay. At this point, Brian's lost eyes on the Escalade man, right?
No, Escalade man sitting inside of Del Taco waiting for his order. Brian's in the back of there relieving himself.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So
Brian's sitting behind there by himself.
I am following the Escalade man in. I wait behind him and I is there anything else about his physical form that I can tell now that I'm standing next to him?
Distinguished looking guy. He looks over at you and he says, hey, great show.
I strike up a conversation with him and say, oh, were you at the San Diego show?
Yeah. I'm a big fan.
Do I recognize him from the San Diego show?
Like, I'm a bit of a lurker, You know, you probably sat in the back.
I kick in the door of the Del Taco, and I'm like, Justin, I went pee back there, and I didn't see anybody. It didn't seem like anybody was following us at all.
So hey, you're Brian, yelling how through you doing the kitchen?
Yeah.
Are you going to wash your hands?
I was like, now I'm going to go inside the bathroom over here and wash my hands because otherwise that'd be insanitary. I rubbed my finger across some graffiti to see if it was fresh. I felt like it was fresh, but none got on my fingers. But I feel like I should wash my hands. I'll be in the bathroom if you need me. And I go in the bathroom.
That's good. Not that it matters. I mean, he looks down at his tacos and a little tear comes down his eye.
I look at the guy and I say, ha-ha, Brian, recycling material from the show earlier tonight, huh?
Yeah.
What does he say back?
Yeah, no, it's great, guys. You know, and he just looks wistfully out the window. And Brian can hear from the bathroom because it's a small Del Taco. And he's just like, just enjoy life while you can. Just enjoy it while you can.
I say, hey, listen, mister. I pull out a chair and I sit next to him. And I'm like, well, I have no doubt that you know who we are, and it seems weird that you would say that you were at the show that we literally just did, but Brian didn't make a joke like that at all during the Night Attack show that you claim to be in the back seeing, and my photographic memory does not remember you there. So what do you say? Also, you fess up with some real deets here,
also as the camera pans wide, you see that somehow I've snuck back next to Justin and I'm there the whole time, and I nod and I was like, yeah.
It's like, listen, I was there. I got the ticket stubs, guys. I'm a fan. I am a fan. You know, I've got your albums. I buy your merch. I got your stickers. He reaches over and pulls out a laptop and there's a Diamond Club sticker on the back, and I die in the fire. And
I say, if you're a real fan, then what is Andrew Main's favorite selection from the dollar menu at McDonald's?
Like, I don't know. It probably changes.
Yeah. Well, describe to me the thought process.
All right, lucky guess.
It's all right, guys. It's all right. And he's just opens up his laptop, looks at the screen, and looks up at you like, oh, no. Shuts it.
Hey, buddy.
Anyhow.
Were you getting ready to load up Hearthstone? Because Justin doesn't play video games, but he knows a thing or two about the H.
Yeah, no. Anyhow, good show. Good show, guys.
All right. Hey, do me a favor. What's your name, by the way?
Hawthorne,
let's cut the jive. You had something crazy on your laptop, and you wistfully said, live life while you can. It seems like that there's something on your mind, and I'm going to need you to go ahead and spill it out here.
I understand your reticence to share with us, but perhaps Mr. Beefsteak Soft Taco will influence your decision?
So let me ask you a hypothetical. You guys are really great at these things, especially when you don't have that Andrew guy sort of weighing you down. If you had a choice between living a full life, but maybe midway through, not a full life, but dying in your sleep and never knowing you're about to die, or living a longer life, but then having an agonizing death knowing that it was coming, which would you choose?
I reach over and whisper into Justin's ear.
And I'm not going to murder you.
Okay. I whisper to Justin. That I didn't really expect him to take that beef soft taco. I was really hoping to finish that. Oh.
It's Del Taco. They're very cheap.
Okay.
So, in fact, you want to know what?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and make the call now out of the
budget. He reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a credit card. It's not black. It's not titanium. It's not black. It's clear. It's a clear, full-on clear credit card. Goes up to the counter, says, give them whatever they want.
Okay. All right. I grab my beef soft taco and between mouthfuls say, I probably want to die in my sleep. I'm really not excited about being scared of my own death, and I'd like to sneak up against me.
No, I would go the opposite way. I would prefer to live the longest life possible, and I would find that confronting and conquering my fear of death would be the adventure of a lifetime.
Interesting. And what if you had a disease that was incurable?
This hypothetical disease, is it beef transmitted?
Pardon me?
This hypothetical disease, is it transmitted by way of beef?
Don't talk with your mouth full.
Oh, sorry.
No. Exactly. I mean, would you, if you had it, would you want to know? Because let's say you knew it didn't change the fact that you were going to die. You didn't feel any symptoms until basically the last day.
Yeah, no, I'd appreciate the heads up because I'd have some affairs to get in order.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. He looks down at his laptop. Looks back up at you.
I look at him. I look at him with quizzical eyes. I say, "You seem to have some very specific dark scenarios." And then pause, and then say, "You're not a fan of the Weird Things podcast, are you?"
Hey, it's not my favorite one. I'm more of a. I like Light Attack. It's a little lighter. You
okay,
know,
Light
lighter.
Attack.
Not as intellectual, you know.
Yeah. You seem to be a dark, mysterious personality with an endless source of money. And I know that because we just ordered $100,000 worth of tacos and the order went through without a hitch. What's your game, Mr. Man?
It's Hawthorne Snyder to you. You can call me Hawthorne.
What's up,
Big
Hawthorne?
H, hot, whatever you want. Back in the 80s, I was a computer scientist and a mathematician and into physics, and I started building computer models. I realized that you could predict things like currency fluctuations and certain things in the stock market. You can't predict it in the long run, but if you have the faster computer system and you pick up these things quicker, you can do microsecond transactions, you can make yourself quite wealthy, and I made myself a very wealthy man. very wealthy man, but I don't like publicity. I try to keep it sort of kind of to myself. You're not going to really see me listed in Fortune or Forbes. You might see my name in a few places. You might know that I'm attached to some hedge funds and stuff, but I'm not a flashy man. I avoid politics. I avoid these things. I just follow my passions. My passions, podcasting, listening to you guys. It's a big passion for mine. I want to creep you out.
This is great. Quick question. Are you familiar with patreon.com/nightattack?
It's like, you know what, gentlemen, I am, and I feel bad that I feel guilty that I haven't gotten around to do it.
Don't worry. We'll take it out in tacos.
Pulls out his laptop. You get a notification from Patreon all of a sudden. What was your max? What was your max spending level? Your max funding level?
Well, $50 a horse boy.
Yeah, but what's like? Yeah, like I guess what was your goal? Your overall goal there?
Oh, like you know, we're shooting. We start having big rewards at $1 million per Tuesday night.
It's like, all right, I like you guys. I don't like you that much, but that's $10,000 per Tuesday night. Sound
pretty great, boss.
All right,
thumbs up.
There you go. And then he closes the laptop and looks wistfully out the window.
Hey, man, look, now that we're friends and you're our boss and everything, you seem a little down. You seem a bit distracted. Can we help you?
There is no help for this, guys. Hope for this. Just do your shows. Make people laugh. Make people merry.
All right. Listen. You are a tremendous benefactor, and I'm glad that we've run into you. I'm really apologetic for this weird pea-centric cloak and dagger routine that Brian and I ran on you as you walked in. So now all of our cards are on the table. I'm going to ask for some honesty. If we could do one thing for you beyond what we're already doing, what would you ask of us?
There's nothing can be done. Nothing can be done.
Well, it sounds okay. Forgive me. Maybe I'm a bit out of line here, but it seems like you're wistful and upset because you feel like an impending disaster is coming, and maybe there's some things in your computer forecasting that look pretty bad. But look, even if we can't change that thing, we can just change the circumstances of our lives leading up to it. What would do the most good for you?
I don't know if you want this burden. I don't know if you want this burden.
What else are we doing? I already finished.
No, and for whatever reason, I start turning to the other Del Taco 3 a.m. patrons. I don't know, guys. Do we want this burden? And then I wait for a big thunderous response of yes.
And then we hear the hand dryer go off in the bathroom, and all of a sudden the guy who sold us the VW bus walks out, and we're like, yeah, we do.
He's not there. Brian's just staring into the space, imagining.
Okay. I was imagining that.
Doing an impression of the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Also, the impression.
It's like, all right, let me think about this for him. The man gets up, walks outside, stares up at the sky. His hands are on his hips, looking into the moonlight, thinking things over. Then all of a sudden, a black SUV comes racing through the parking lot, smacks into him, knocks him across the ground, and the car drives off.
Oh!
The restaurant?
No, outside. This is outside. Okay. Yeah, no, I run over, and I tear open his coat, and I feel across his chest for that clear credit card. but then also to see if he's breathing.
Password.
Hawthorne, what's the password?
Shut up.
Password is password.
Password? Password? I begin to administer CPR.
Yeah, Blood starts trickling out of his mouth all over you.
Oh, man.
So that was, we're agreeing it was passworm, PASSWORM.
Oh, I thought it was passworn, WORN, like a decayed, yeah, decayed, overused.
Password is...
I pull out my
D-I-A-F
phone.
D-I-A-F dies.
Oh, Dave, you said D-I-A-F. I heard that. I still look for that clear credit card just in case.
Wait! It's D-I-A-C. Yes, D-I-A-C. I changed it, given what's happening. And then he dies.
Oh, no. Hold on. Die in a fire. So it's not die in a fire. Maybe die in a catastrophe? Died in a cataclysm? Die in
and
a catechism?
Reaches up towards his nose, and he taps it.
I say, but seriously, I'm going to take that clear credit card, and then I try to find the clear credit card.
Tan reaches out, and he hands you the clear credit card.
I nod to him, and I say, we're going to stop the sea, you.
Now he's there, dead in the parking lot.
All right, so we back call on the table. Cops. Call the cops to get a police report in.
So you call the cops. Where are you right now?
We're at the Del Taco, man. In fact, I looked and I hope there's a payphone because I hope there's artifacts that will make cinematography easy on this.
There is a payphone.
Oh, good. So I dial 1900 cops and
before you get to the payphone, it starts to ring.
What? I pick up the phone and quizzically I look to Justin. And gesture.
Run. Get out of there. They're about to get you.
I immediately hang up the phone and say, let's just hide in these shadows. That's a fun game, Justin. Come on.
I mean, like, should we move our car?
Nope. I think we should go right now. We got the clear credit card. We got shadows. What wouldn't be fun about this? And I immediately dive into the shadows.
As you run by the shadows, you realize his laptop is still sitting on the table. I'm only going to say this for one more time before I remind you. That might be something you want.
I run into the Del Taco. I get the laptop, and then I say, hey, do me a favor. I want you to just leave those $100,000 worth of tacos behind the counter. I'm coming back to get the tacos, so don't eat them.
I shout from inside the bushes. I was like, give him a name. Give him a name to put him under.
You want to put him under Hawthorne.
I was like, I got a bad feeling, mainly because a phone call told me that something bad's going to happen.
I grab at least $70 worth of tacos that have already been created on my way out because we're going to be on the road.
I immediately, upon seeing Justin, I ask, how many of those are beef? How many of those are chicken?
And I say, well, let's sit down and count them. We then spend the next 45 minutes counting and cataloging all of the different tacos.
But in the shadows.
Not eating them. So it involves us sticking our fingers into the taco, each taco, and saying, beef? Or is that a question?
You hear a whistling sound overhead.
Hey, Justin, I think we should vacate the premises.
Run fast.
So we start running away.
To the van, where are you going?
Just out, and I don't trust.
On foot? On car?
Yeah, on foot. It
might be time to get into the car, Brian.
Well, okay, fine. We get into the car. We get into the car. We start the car. We start driving away.
Boom! Del Taco's blown up.
Oh, my gosh. Justin, you're driving. Slam on the gas. Let's go.
The tacos! I scream as we drive down the road.
I am munching on various soft tacos as I ask, man, that guy really seemed to know a lot about the future, and now we have his laptop. While you're driving, didn't he mention a password? So I open up the password and open up the laptop.
Which is?
D-I-A-C, I write, and then hit enter.
Hit enter. Next thing you know, there's an app running with a countdown clock.
How much time is on the countdown clock?
42 days.
Justin, we got time to hit our Santa Monica gig and then 41 more days to spare.
Before what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's I examine the app. I open up the digital signature and go to help and then about to see who wrote the app.
Well, I mean, it's Hawthorne. But then you notice on the desktop, there is a note that says to Brian and Justin.
Oh, I opened up the note. I said, Justin, I think there's a note to both of us.
I say, oh, while I eat a taco and drive.
Dear Brian and Justin, I've wrestled with this. Should I tell you or should I not? If you're reading this now, it's probably too late for me, but not too late for you. To live life to your fullest, to enjoy things as you can, to love the ones around you, and all that other stuff. But if you really have to know what's going on, click this hyperlink underlined here.
Justin, do we really want to know what's going on?
Be warned.
Hold on, I'm still reading.
Your life will never be the same again.
Justin, do you mind if our lives are never the same again? Because it sounds like he knows something and he wants to give us every opportunity to not know it.
If I could not know it, I would not know this.
I have my mouth filled with tacos, and I make a noise that if you heard 100 times, 50 times would sound like no, and 50 times would sound like sure.
So I read the words before telling Justin so that I might, if I deem it necessary, spare him the horrific knowledge contained within.
So you click the link?
I do click the link.
And a video pops up and starts to autoplay, and it's Hawthorne.
I'm frantically.
I appreciate your bravery for clicking on this. Now I will tell you everything, and you will never be the same again.
I shrug my shoulders and let it play.
I've used my fortune to investigate many different scientific endeavors. I've funded cloning, I've funded particle physics. I funded microbiology. I funded massive artificial intelligence systems. I funded an array of telescopes. Nothing could have prepared for the discovery that I made, or the realization that I was not the first one to make this, or the lengths at which people will go to keep this a secret.
And that is, I say...
Into video.
Okay.
Click here to watch the next video.
I click there to watch the next video.
I'm glad you made it to this video. Now I will be able to tell you everything about Troll and what you need to know.
Troll?
Not that you can do anything about it.
I tap Justin on the shoulder. I said, that's what the graffiti said. It was freshly painted while I was peeing out in the back.
I make another noise that could be either sure or no.
Understand now, there is no going back. Nothing you can do.
I say, God, video, go. Let's hear it.
And he holds up a photograph. I had this photograph made, even though I'm doing a video, and I could have just inserted it, but I wanted you to know that it was real, although I printed it out, which, anyhow, just go with it, guys. Photograph.
What's the photograph of?
It's black. It's just black.
Wait, I as if I'm a 1950s housewife yelling at a television, I'm like, well, what the heck? That's a black photo. That's not a photo of nothing at all.
It is the most terrifying photograph I've ever seen, gentlemen.
I look at me. I'm talking to a video playback. I don't suppose he'll pre-figure out what question I'm about to ask, but what would be significant about a photograph of a bunch of nothing?
This was taken from one of my private telescopes.
It seems like you should have... Wait a minute. Justin, if this is from a telescope, where are the stars?
Oh. Well, actually, it's adjusted for that. But let me show you a photograph taken from one of my secret telescopes. It's got a highly elliptical orbit. It was taken from a slight angle at just the right time. It's a slight glimmer.
Justin, I don't get none of this. I just wish
now, I'm
that-
sure you may be confused and may not get any of this, but that's fine. What you're looking at is a black comet.
Justin, a black comet sounds kind of like a black hole, but that travels through space. And I would imagine if it was a black hole traveling through space, it could hit the Earth and then suck the Earth up and then we'd all die.
Not a black hole. That would be idiotic. It's just a massive, large object heading towards the Earth that our telescopes cannot pick up. Only my secret telescope array is able to pick it up. And possibly other intelligence agencies have discovered this.
I turn to Justin, God, and I say to Justin, wow, man, Hawthorne really seems to have a problem with Neal Stephenson's book Seven Eves for some reason. What do you think?
Brian, are we about to Armageddon this.
I mean, certainly we're the only ones who know. There's the powers that be that may know by implication, and then there's us who have firsthand accounts of a computer simulation that says that a black comet is headed to destroy the world. We've got to save the world, Justin.
Is there anywhere in that FAQ that says who can we trust and who can't we trust? Because somebody definitely sent a missile to blow up that Del Taco, and missiles aren't cheap. So there's really only a few kinds of people that could be blowing up a Del Taco.
Well, play the next video.
I click play on the next video.
You know, at first, I thought, and my researchers thought, it was a black comet, purely just a black comet. We thought it was purely that's what's going to happen to us. We thought this is what's going on. We thought that, hey, we've seen this scenario. We've seen this in Larry Niven novels. We've seen this over and over. Purnell. We've seen this a lot of times. I mean, you know, the tendency to say, oh, I know how this plays out. I understand that. But then
I click next video.
Click the next video. And then there's like an FFmpeg error. So now you've got to look at it for.
So I restart it.
Curious thing was, we looked at it, we tried to figure out what was going on. My researchers looked at this thing. We looked for more data. We looked for more scans. We picked up a radio signal.
I turned to Justin wide-eyed with my mouth in an O shape as my eyebrows dance comically in surprise.
So we don't know. Things heading towards us at speeds that will annihilate the Earth, could cause major problems. Several miles long. It's like 20 miles long. It's massive. It's huge. And we think there may be some sort of radio signal coming from it.
All right. I pressed pause on the video and I turned to Justin. I was like, Justin, we got to find out everything we can. We are in Southern California in the Los Angeles area. We need somebody who has a knowledge of how to get to space.
And I know everybody's inclined to think this is their most recent movie reference or whatever that comes to mind. But over 100 years ago, H.G. Wells talked about a scenario like this.
I look quizzically.
There's a really, really deep knowledge of science fiction that seems to be pinpricked from one specific comment that happened earlier in the ride.
I turned to Justin. I was like, dude, we got to go see if we can break into Elon Musk's mansion, that we can present this information from him and together work with Elon Musk to stop or save the world.
Now, I have one more thing to say on this video.
I look at the pause button wondering why it's so busted, but I let it go.
He reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a piece of black rock. Or some material, some shiny material.
Yeah.
Throws up in the air and it gently lands back in his hand. Like it just weighs nothing. Lands. I know what you're going. Pretty cool trick. Well, Brian, this is no scam.
I turned to Justin and I mouthed the words, how did he know I was the one watching the video?
When I decided to investigate what was going on, I sent research teams around the world looking for more evidence, not up there, but in the Earth. And I sent a team to Tunguska in Siberia, where we had may have been a comet or a meteor impact 100 years ago. We found out there was a bit of a cover-up there. More was found. Materials were found. Materials like this. So whatever's heading towards us, we may have been visited before by something like it.
I before saying anything, I tap forward to see if there are any other videos.
That's the end of the videos for now. Everything else will be time-released as need be.
All right, Justin. It sounds like a very specific instruction on this computer. This seems like a really important. I put the laptop in my backpack in my inventory to make sure that it definitely doesn't get lost.
All right,
Justin, where do we go? I mean, it sounds like we can go to Tunguska, over in the former USSR. But Elon Musk is much closer, and we can surely trust him, right?
Brian, there's something that needs to happen now that I'm shocked hasn't happened yet.
I need to cut off my hand and replace it with a chainsaw?
No.
Oh.
You need to DM Elon Musk.
I look at my Twitter to check and see if Elon Musk follows me.
Does he?
Doesn't. No, he doesn't follow
me. He doesn't. I at reply in public, Elon Musk, say, yo, I need a follow so I could DM you something. It's a very, all caps, very important importance. And then in parentheses, like, maybe the world. And then I put dot, 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 ever hear of troll, question mark, in parentheses.
It's like Brian just decides to just publicly go out there with this thing that people are getting killed for.
Hyper secret information that literally.
Do
you publicly tweet this?
I mean, I have to. He doesn't follow me.
You can not say the thing.
Okay. Okay. All right. Let me.
Oh, no. Brian tweeted it. There's an error. That tweet disappeared.
Hold on. I tweet again at Elon Musk. Yo. Follow me back. Hashtag team follow back. And then enter.
And you wait. And you wait. And he does not follow you back.
Oh, man.
Because then you look at all of his tweets and reply. You look at all the people tweeting at him. The number of people have said the same damn thing you said.
Team follow back.
You know, follow me. Hey, Elon, follow me. Whatever. I got information you need.
We got it. All right. Maybe don't say troll. But just include a picture of a troll doll.
Okay, I send him a picture of. I turn to Justin.
Astronaut troll doll.
I say, Justin, real quick.
I had different outfits.
Take your hair and make it in a Cupid doll shape, like a crazy troll doll.
Search on the internet.
This will be easier. Doll. All right, I search. I'm afraid to search troll because I'm sure. Okay, I go to DuckDuckGo because I trust them, and I type in troll doll, and then I get a picture, and I send that to Elon Musk, and I say, "Yo, slide into my DMs."
All right. So you're driving along. 20 minutes later, you get a direct message. Oof. Not from Elon Musk.
Oh.
From who?
From Ed Begley Jr.?
It's Space Guy 207-11111.
Who's this poser? I without reading his response.
You're not even reading it?
I'm not even reading it. I just respond back like, desperate for followers much? Question mark.
And you then, just and then, follow back.
And then I read it. And then I read it. First I respond, then I read it.
Okay.
So you want to know about troll? I can tell you about troll. I can tell you why Elon Musk won't tell you about troll.
And then I respond, I apologize. I probably should have read this before my previous tweet.
No worries. You're not by any chance in between, I don't know, let's say Temecula and Santa Monica.
I turn to Justin and I say, hey, man, where are we?
And I say, well, we just passed Temecula, and the sign up ahead says Santa Monica.
Meet me here. And he sends you a Google Maps.
This looks like it's just right on the way. And I show it to Justin. I say, drive us to this point.
Somebody, it's a little industrial park. It's about a mile or two off the road.
I mean, this seems safe, right?
Sure. I hate to break the mood, but I do got to bounce. Like,
yeah. So we'll find out next week if you're going to go or not.
No, we're definitely going. Quest. We're definitely going. We're definitely going. We got to creep up on it. But next week's mission quest.
I'm so sorry, guys. I should have made clear.
No worries. Give us a pick in less than three sentences.
My pick is Handmaid's Tale. It's really good this season. It's a great example of dystopic science fiction that continues to add to its world and becomes more interesting and complex each episode.
Well done. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Man, I was so excited to be starting a new mission. With Mission Quest, it's going to be great.
And you know, it's never going to end up where you think it's going to end up.
I know.
You know that.
I know. It's so much fun. I just love, when we played Dungeons & Dragons and when I played City of Heroes and stuff, there's nothing better than a blank character sheet, just feeling like anything is possible. Hey, man, I got a pick that I've given before, but I'm rereading right now. I don't know if I successfully got you to read it, but it begins with The Lies of Locke Lamora by Scott Lynch. It's the Gentleman Bastards series. I found myself when I was in Australia swapping stories of good sci-fi and fantasy books with somebody. And the more I started to talk up The Lies of Locke Lamora, the more like viscerally excited I got back to I got to go back and experience again. I'm really digging it. And as often happens, when you experience a story for the second time and what started off as a bunch of expositional, I don't want to say nonsense, but you're like, well, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. This sounds like world building. Okay, I'm getting a sense of, I'm getting my sea legs underneath me. It's so much fun to go back and realize that the author has had the ending in mind from the very beginning, and that you know, when you know the world, you're like, oh my God, of course, he's just flat out telling me where stuff is going to go. This is amazing.
That's great.
It's a lot of fun. Highly recommend it. Begin with The Lies of Locke Lamora. It's the Gentleman Bastards series.
Cool. Bryce?
I just got back into a video game that I had dropped a few months ago, and I'm liking it more than I liked it when I first started it, because so much of it is there are some issues with it, but I've been really getting back into Persona 5. It is a turn-based RPG where you spend your days in school and around town, and then at night you can go into these dungeons and fight monsters, and you have this balance between, you know, daily life of, you know, going to meet people and raising your stats and going and doing stuff and spending your nights fighting, you know, evil. And it's really cool. It's a very good traditional JRPG, and it touches on really interesting contemporary issues of power imbalances and harassment. It's very cool. If you're into JRPG games, I think with qualifications, it is one of the best ones ever.
Right on.
Groovy. I mentioned this before, but if you're an iPhone user, and you've thought about AirPods, it is a life changing. I have been using these. I love these. And I keep just, it's changed the way that I, you know, do a lot of things, because the fact they charge in the case is great. It, you know, makes it, you know, you don't worry about running out of battery on them. I use it with all my other devices. I'll have it connect up to, you know, my Apple TV, whatever. You can do it with, you know, I have a Kindle, you know, Kindle Fire tablet, and, you know, Fire HD tablet, which is, you know, use it with that. Big fan. I think, you know, there are other brands or other stuff out there, but I think that, like, I, you know, if you're inclined to spend the money on them, I think you'll be very, very happy. And there are things that could be better. Like, could have better noise canceling, other things like this, but just the utility of it, it's one of the things that I think they really thought well. I thought they thought it through very well. So I've been very happy with them. I don't regret it. I was on the fence, like, I don't want to spend this much for just, you know, little earbuds and whatever. And then I did it, and I'm like, you know what? So glad I did.
Do you like the fit on those? I know I like the earbud sort of form, but I know a lot of people aren't a fan of that. Do they fit well for you?
They fit fine for me. You know, anything that I put in my ears for several hours at a time, I'll start to, you know, it'll get a little bit irritating, but I haven't met one that isn't like that, any in-ear that's like that. But I've been very, very, very happy with
and
it.
This is one of those rare circumstances where I'm one of the lucky few that it just fits absolutely perfectly. I can wear them all day, every day. I sometimes will go to bed with the earbuds in my ears, and mm-hmm. they will remain undisturbed. I'll wake up with them still in there.
Yeah.
They. I'm not going to say they're perfect, but they've gotten damn close.
Yeah. I think it's an example of, you know, like, and we're in a market now where somebody comes up with something cool, then other marketers or companies will try to figure out a way to a comparable feature for it, and then sort of kind of move forward on it. And I think that I hope more people try to adopt, you know, the way that, like, the Pixel or the Buds or whatever that, you know, Google had were. You know, I think I have better fidelity in certain things like this, but they were just bigger, just not, you know, it's just a different solution where these things are great. You put it in your pocket, you're great. So anyway, that's my pick. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.